Well, it's just turned the hour and it's high time we opened up the little box of tricks that connects me with the inimitable, the inestimable and the wonderful John Ketley for his weather show. John, how are you today?
I'm very well. I think you've been on countdown, have you, recently or something, with all these new swanky words?
Yes, I'll have three from the top and two from the bottom or something like that, or a consonant and three vowels.
Have a consonant, yeah. But anyway, I'm very well. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for caring.
Well, we need a lot of care at the moment, all sorts of reasons, but our weather's been a bit interesting. Did I see that the Met Office have said that January is one of the coldest we've had?
They probably did catch up eventually, yes. I think a month ago we were talking about it being a cold start to the year, and it has actually been the coldest January for 10 years. If you remember, going back in time, 2009, 10 and 11 all started very cold beginning of each year. That was a bit of a break in tradition because we've obviously seen much milder January since the turn of the century. And it hasn't been particularly cold since 2011 in January. But those 3 years were the coldest. And now we've had something which has really matched it very well. So looking at the figures for Lincolnshire in particular, we've obviously shared in everybody's woes. Temperatures across Lincolnshire were at least a degree down on average, over 1 degree down on average as a mean temperature, which is quite high, really, when you're looking at a winter month of such low figures anyway. And we've seen an awful lot of rain. Different parts of Lincolnshire have seen more than others, as they always are. But Cranwell did come up with some extremely high rainfall figures. They had 103 millimetres, which is over 4 inches, obviously. And that represented exactly twice what they normally get in January. Now, it's not to suggest that January is sometimes a dry month. It often isn't, because you do tend to get dry weather into February, although last year was, again, completely contrasting to that. But January was pretty wet, got to be said, across most parts of the UK, but Lincolnshire shared in the fun, and Cranwell, as I say, had twice its normal rainfall with 103 millimetres. Everywhere else in Lincolnshire as well saw an awful lot. Coningsby had 90 millimetres, Scampton 85, and Waddington 89 millimetres and 97 millimetres at Holbeach. So you can see there was a good spread of very wet weather, and everybody knows now, not only in this county but all across the country, how much waterlogging there is going on. The rivers have been swollen on several occasions. It doesn't feel to me, Andrew, I don't know what you think about this, but 12 months ago, 15 months ago, it felt wetter, although this year everything's not drying up at all because it's been so cold, I suppose. Nothing's drying up like it should do, so especially if you're on clay soils like we are here, everything's really boggy and it's stayed that way for weeks.
You're funny you should say that, because we've invested in putting a freezer in the garage, so I have to walk down to the door on the side of the garage. And I walked across the lawn a couple of days ago and I was squelching. Yes, and that's something I've never noticed around here. It is holding the water extraordinarily. And the fields, they've actually dug extra drainage ditches off the side of the fields around here to get rid of the surface water.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a thing that's mounting up, isn't it? After last year's very heavy rains, and then I know we had some hot, dry weather in the summer, but we've had drier summers, it's got to be said. And then we had some wetter weather again during different parts of autumn. But I think it actually contributes, you know, over month by month by month, year by year. I think it is actually starting to get soggier. And so the water table underneath, though we can't see it, must be higher than it was several years ago. I fancy that's the problem.
Absolutely. And good news for Anglian Water, but not ever so good news for farmers and growers.
No, everybody's been complaining, I know, but... you know, it's never right, is it? I mean, if you're a farmer or a market gardener or whatever you are, the weather is always going to play tricks with you, and you just got to manage it somehow the best you can. But that's the rainfall. Certainly an awful lot of rainfall. Temperatures, as I say, over a degree down, well over a degree down on long-term averages. And then if you look at the sunshine, well, that wasn't that exciting either, because we've only got the sunshine figures over at Waddington. And they recorded just 52 hours of sunshine throughout 31 days. So that's, I think that's pretty miserable, really. Yes. I mean, that's only just over 1.5 hours of vitamin D per day on average. It actually represents 85% of the normal sunshine amounts that you get in January. So that was, dull. I think you could call it dull, wet and cold, which is not very inspiring. And it's not what we want, really, in these terrible times of health. You know, we'd all like, wouldn't we, a repeat of what we had last spring when we were in lockdown the first time, and we'd all like to be out and about in your garden if you could be. Not much to do at this time of the year, I appreciate, except look at your snowdrops coming through. Yes. But yeah, we could do with some nicer weather, I've got to say.
Yes, and it's interesting with the remark you made about you didn't think it felt as wet as it was last year. They talk about SAD, seasonally adjusted depression. Now, we've had so much else going on, maybe that hasn't been quite so prevalent. But I have, you know, that 52 hours of sunshine, or lack of, hundreds of hours of sunshine, really, I found every morning getting up, even though the clocks were giving us a little bit of extra light in the morning, you know, on the bad days, it was grim and awful.
Yeah, absolutely right. And if you're complaining, well, just think about other people in different parts of the country who've been worse off than we have. I've got to say, I mean, we've seen throughout the month of January, we saw several reports of flooding, didn't we? We had it up in Warrington, around Greater Manchester, Didsbury. I lived in Didsbury for the first 2 years of my working life when I was at Manchester Airport. So I know what it's like around there. I don't remember any flooding at that time. That's a long time ago, nearly 50 years. There was terrible flooding around Wales as well, different parts of the Western Midlands. But it's, you know, people have to remember that we're still stupidly building lots of houses on floodplains. I don't know when this is ever going to stop. Perhaps it never will. If people keep going on about climate change, then they've got to start thinking that you can't build where you've always built before. It's just ludicrous. And we have real problems every time it rains now, with the ground being saturated. You're going to add to the problems of the water coming off the mountains of Wales, for example, the Pennines. It's all going into the same place every year. So York, badly affected yet again in January, and down the River Severn, down through Bridge North Shrewsbury, and all the way down to Tewkesbury. So it was ever thus, Andrew. It's always been like this. But conditions seem to be, well, we're highlighting them a lot more, aren't we? Everybody takes pictures now on their iPhones. And so it's all highlighted. It's always there in the media.
And I think one of the other problems is that traditionally, when people wanted to build houses anywhere, I'm talking a couple of hundred years ago, you'd always build it near a good water source. So there's a natural inclination to build near rivers and the like, so that you've got a natural water supply. You don't need to do it now because water is piped to your house. So, yes, I mean, I can remember going around Newark probably this time last year by train when I was commuting in from Nottingham to Lincoln, and all of those fields on either side, which are floodplain fields, the other side of the Trent, were full of water. And if it hadn't been for the banks which had been built where the new houses were deliberately to stop it, those new houses would have been flooded.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. I'm going to give you some good news now, because if you were living in Lerwick in Shetland in January, they had 53 hours of sunshine. They had virtually exactly the same amount of sunshine as we had. And look how much further north Lerwick is. And that represented twice their normal sunshine amounts for January. In fact, they had an incredible month. They may not have thought it at the time, because it did rain on occasions. They did have 79 millimetres of rain, but that's less than we got. But they had all this sunshine, twice their normal amount of sunshine. So I would think they were skipping in the streets in Lerwick. And temperatures, well, they were still very cold. They were still a degree and a half below average. But they only had half their normal amount of rainfall. So that's the good news. And that's probably where the good news finishes for January, because looking around different parts of the country, it was pretty miserable in some other areas. Isle of Man did very well. They had about 40% more sunshine than normal. But if you look in the south of England, where there was an awful lot of rain across the south of England, and I'm going to come on to Shrewsbury Ness as well, because we highlight Shrewsbury Ness because it's often the driest place in the whole of the UK each month. Yeah. Well, this time it certainly wasn't, because in Shrewsbury Ness, in Essex, they had 243% of their normal rainfall. They measured 103 millimetres, just slightly more than we got. But that's 243% of average. And their sunshine was less than ours. They had barely 50 hours. So Essex, in fact, many parts of southern England, and the reason is that they have this bad wet weather on many occasions, is because there's high pressure up to the north of Scotland. That's why Shetland was good. The high pressure up to the north was acting as a block. And so the battle lines have been drawn on many occasions during January. with rain bands coming in across southern England and Wales, stopping across the north of England and then going back again, then another one coming in behind it, bumping into it and accentuating the amount of rainfall in the south, whereas the north, much of Scotland, actually benefited with more bright skies and drier conditions. So that's what's been happening over the past few weeks. And temperatures obviously were pretty low as well, because we were always drawing in winds more from the northeast, if you like, or something like that, northwest, rather than coming in from the south or southwest off the Atlantic. So we very rarely got these subtropical conditions. They did affect far southern counties of England at times, but for most of the time we weren't getting these higher temperatures creeping north. I mean, the highest temperature we got in Lincolnshire during the month was consistently 11 degrees. Coningsby got 12.4, just about, but 11.1 degree was the highest temperature recorded in most parts of Lincolnshire, and that was only very briefly on odd occasions as we went through the month of January. So quite remarkable, that. Other places also catching an awful lot of rainfall. Well, from what I've just said, you'll understand the rain bands were moving north and bumping into the cold weather across Scotland. So places across northeast England especially, they really caught an awful lot of rain. You know, Loftus and Filingdales up there in the northeast of England, North York Moors, Loftus near Redcar, they finished up with 170 millimetres of rain, an awful lot, more than three times their normal January rainfall there. Quite extraordinary, that. And in the Vale of York as well, 218% at Leaming and Topcliffe. Albemarle up in Northumberland, they had 233% of their normal rainfall. And we're talking about figures up around 125 millimetres by and large, whereas Loftus was 170. That's up on the coast, so they are a bit vulnerable there. But these were the areas which were really catching an awful lot of rain, and very cold as well, with temperatures again still well over 1 degree below where they should have been. Now, Capel Curig, we can't go without mentioning Capel Curig. But I keep looking at their webcam. The weather never seems that bad every time I look. It seems to be sunny. I think it's a still. Capel Curig actually finished up with just 19% above their normal rainfall, and yet their figure clocked out at 345 millimetres of rain. Quite extraordinary amounts of rainfall. And then down in the south, well, Shoebury and Eswick covered them, 243% of normal, and they had 102 millimetres. Very dull, actually, around London, because of the same reasons we've talked about. But St James's Park, Charlwood in Surrey, and Heathrow, you know, just had 29 hours of sunshine in the entire month. So that was just a half of what they would normally expect in West London in a typical January. And that's miserable. That's really depressing, don't you think?
It is. And just going back to North Wales, where we were slightly, one of the things that I got from our friend and correspondent, Dr. Nigel in North Wales, was an amazing picture. He's at the top end of Colwyn Bay, looking up towards the range that has Snowdonia in it. Some spectacular snow cover for Snowdonia. But down where he is, of course, it's almost tropical. He had snow, but it disappeared quickly. But it stayed up on Snowdonia and looks quite spectacular. Looks alpine.
Oh, yes, it will do. And it will continue to do so as well. But we'll come on to that later in the programme, because there's some interesting times ahead, I have to tell you. If we just look at, I've described January as being cold, wet and dull. And that's the way it was, really, if we take away Shetland from the equation. The central England temperature, which we often talk about, it was Gordon Manley's baby. That goes back through central England temperature records back to 1659. And the central England temperature during January this year was 3.1 degree. That's the mean temperature across central England. Just to put that in perspective, that's 150th out of 363 years. So it was actually on the cold side of average, 150th coldest of the 363 years. Yeah. But just to keep it in context, with an average of 3.1, compare that with that staggeringly cold and snowy winter that we had back in 1963 when we were very young children.
Indeed.
The average temperature then was minus 2.1. So this year was 5 degrees milder.
Yeah.
So many things to talk about with January. Philip Eden, you know, God bless him, he wrote articles about all sorts of things to do with the weather when he was working. And he came up with various figures. He was a big supporter of the central England temperature compiled by Gordon Manley, and he went through decades and decades, in fact centuries, of figures, and he was saying how between 1940 and 1970 there was a bit of a hiccup in average January temperatures, because we'd seen the coldest decades of all being in the 1770s with a mean temperature then of 1.3, but from those lowly points it got steadily warmer. There's a definite warming trend in the 19th century into the 20th century until the 1920s. The mean January temperature then had risen to 4.7. But between 1940 and 1970, there was a hiccup again. It went down a degree. The average temperature went down a degree in January between those 30 years. But then things have recovered. Obviously, we all are very aware of how things have changed in the back end of the 20th century. And again, now into the early part of the 21st. So the 1990s, they were averaging temperatures of 4.7 degrees compared with something like 1.3 degrees back in the 1770s. But every now and again, you see, I mean, averages are OK, and you can use average and statistics for whatever you want to prove. But if you look back on the Central England temperature records, the three, and this is quite staggering, the three mildest Januaries on all that period, you know, going back to 1659, the three mildest Januaries were 1796, 1916 and 1921. Quite ridiculous, isn't it, that even in those very cold spells, you still turned up with the wind changing direction, more of a subtropical influence, and temperatures higher than they've ever been since. Quite staggering.
I mean, that's the brilliant thing about the whole of the weather machine, isn't it? I mean, we talk about global effects that human beings have brought to it, but also volcanoes erupting and all sorts of stuff like that. It's predictably unpredictable, and that's what's brilliant. And mapping changes, suddenly you get weird years at 96, 16 and 21 that throw the record book out, so that everybody who's charting these wonderful algorithms that smooth things out get these spikes. And that's the brilliant thing. And of course, the lovely thing about the UK, which so many people coming from more arid conditions say they love the UK's weather, because it is so temperate.
Well, yes. I mean, I've mentioned earlier in the programme that February tends to be one of our driest months. And yet last year, last February, was the wettest, wasn't it, on record, I think. absolutely staggering. It was mild, obviously, because if it's going to be wet, it's generally speaking going to be mild. But that's how things were just 12 months ago. Just finishing on January for the UK, and I'm going to come on to what happened in further afield after we've had a track. But looking at the period, we talked about how it got milder at the end of the 1990s into the early part of this century. The average mean temperature for 2000 to 2009 was 5.02. So that's exactly 2 degrees above what we've seen this year, 2 degrees above what we've just experienced.
Yeah.
2010 to 2019, so in that decade, it dropped by half a degree or more, three quarters of a degree, 4.3. So that was a cooler decade, strangely. Mm-hmm. And we've started off this decade now. Last year, 2020 January, the temperature mean in January was 6.4, very high. And yet this year, 3.1. So this year was half of what it was last year. You know,
that's wonderful. Absolutely. I love it when it throws the record books out all over the place.
Well, it's very nice to have these books handy, because you can always prop your door open with them. But, you know, they do have an awful lot of information in there, but you've always got to read between the lines, haven't you?
Absolutely. So where are we going now? Are we going to have your Fabo tune? You got me doing some research this month.
Well, I've always been a great fan of Chris Rea, and his greatest record, in my opinion, was On the Beach. Or was he off the beach? He was on the beach, wasn't he, most of the time?
One of the two.
He was definitely on the beach. I think he was probably on the beach writing most of his tracks. But he did actually, for one time in 1991, he came off the beach and he wrote a song called A Winter Song.
Lazy wind, all the way through you.
And that was Chris Rea from 1991 with Winter Song. Did you like that one, Andrew?
I did. I didn't know it. And in fact, I had to go to an alternative database to find it. And even there, I had to dig around for it. Not one of his better known tracks, but I don't know why, because it's got a lovely sort of lilt to it. But
yeah, nice lilt. I like that phrase. Yes,
no, lilt nice is lilt. Good. Is it? Yes. Anyway, meanwhile, so we had wet, gloomy, yes, dull, wet and cold is the way you described it. The last 30 odd days that we've had since we last chatted. Where are we going to now? Going to have a look at other parts?
Well, I want to have a look around different parts of the world. We often experience some very dramatic weather across different parts of mainland Europe in the winter months, actually doing most times of the year. But in the winter months, it can fluctuate and ebb and flow very quickly. In different parts of Europe, you often get the very heavy, which you have in January, very heavy snowfall in the Alps. But at the same time, sometimes you get some pretty hot and sunny weather down in the Mediterranean. It's more limited than it would be in the summer months, but it does happen. But of course, the Mediterranean climate is, by its very nature, a winter regime for rainfall. That's when they want to catch their rainfall to harness it for the summer months. But it doesn't mean to say that you're not going to get some warm and sunny weather, even in Spain, in January. And I believe that you've got some evidence of that.
Well, yes. It was Debbie who knows places like Javier very well, and around Alicante, a bit further south from Javier. And she was noticing from stuff that comes in, because she follows people who are down there, that recently they've had an unbelievable heat bloom, with temperatures up around 27 and 28 degrees Celsius for the back end of January. Quite extraordinary, although she was then reflecting that sometimes she went out for an early break many, many years ago, and she would often find that the temperatures weren't too bad around sort of February half term.
Quite normal. Yeah, it is. It happens. It's not reliable, as we've been saying already. It's not reliable. You know, you couldn't plan a holiday, not that you can plan a holiday at the moment at all, but you couldn't plan a holiday for next year or the year after now and say, right, well, in the second week of February or the third week of January, I'm definitely going to go to Almeria because it's guaranteed to be lovely and sunny and hot. It isn't. That's just the way the Mediterranean weather works, just like it works in the UK. Every wind direction has its own weather. But what happened in Alicante is that we've seen these rain bands coming up across southern parts of England, especially up into the Midlands and northern England at times, and as a result of a flux of wind coming in from the south. So the winds have changed direction down in Iberia. They've blocked off the weather from the Atlantic coming into Spain and Portugal, and diverted all the rain bands back up across the UK, which is a fairly normal situation. That's the way the jet stream works. Although we've seen it change again, and we will see it change again in the next few weeks, because there are some interesting times ahead, I think. Even now, today, there's a big cold blast of air coming down all the way across the Atlantic, the eastern Atlantic, which is bringing more heavy rain and showers back down through Madeira, down towards the Canary Islands. So after a nice spell of weather down there, it looks like they're going a little bit changeable, and more wet weather coming in across Spain. But we diverge there, we're digressing, because I just want to go back to the weather in other parts of the world. Back at the beginning of January, over in Chennai, Madras, as we would probably have remembered it, in India, they had 120 millimetres of rain in one day on the 5th of January. I mean, we'd get excited about that, wouldn't we? That's nearly 5 inches in one day. That's an awful lot of rain. But of course, they do have the monsoon over there in India. The only thing is that in January, you don't normally get it so wet, because the worst of the monsoon rains have already gone. It was actually the city's highest rainfall in a single day for the month of January since 1915. So that's quite remarkable. That's over 100 years. They've never had so much rain in one day in January in Chennai. A really heavy downpour resulting in flooding in different parts of the city. So that was pretty horrible. Now back into Europe, and around about the 8th, 10th, somewhere like that of January, it got very, very unsettled across Eastern, the Balkans, and the middle of Europe. Heavy snowfall in the Alps, which I've mentioned, but torrential rainfall once you've crossed the Alps into more southern parts of Europe. And Albania was the first to catch it. Parts of Kosovo as well had some heavy rain and flooding around about the 8th. And that area of rain and slow-moving bands of wet weather, a pivoting rain band really, which didn't want to go anywhere. It kept flexing its muscles in roughly the same area, but it extended from west to east at the same time. So it spread all the way across to Bulgaria, into Albania, Serbia, and also eventually into Turkey. There were flash floods in Izmir over in Turkey by the 12th, all to do with the same sort of systems, really. Torrential rainfall over in that part of Turkey, and in Antalya as well. They also copped it. They caught an awful lot of heavy rain as well around about that same time. Parts of Izmir province, actually, they were recovering from devastating earthquakes, if you remember, back in October last year in Turkey. That that earthquake killed 117 people and triggered coastal flooding. And again, in January, we've seen more people die in the same sort of area, with vehicles being swept away by flash floods in those same sort of districts. So they've had a bit of a rough winter down in different parts of Turkey. Now, coming back to Spain, because some really bad weather hit Spain. Not only was it warm in Alicante briefly, but there was some extremely cold and snowy weather around Madrid. You might have seen some reports on the news.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, even on the 6th of January, Spain registered its lowest temperature on record, with the Catalan Pyrenees recording minus 34 degrees C.
That's extraordinary. But to put it in context, it was the highest bit of the Catalan region, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. It is very mountainous.
Yes.
And when you fly over there, you know how mountainous it tends to be when you drop down then into Barcelona, for example. So you do see an awful lot of mountains up there. But minus 34 degrees, that was the lowest since records of the 2nd of February 1956, when they measured minus 32 degrees C. But everything hinged between the 8th and the 10th, everything hinged on Storm Filomena. That was the storm name given by the Spanish authorities as a band of heavy snow parked itself across the middle of Spain. And Madrid was right in its way. Half the country was on red alert for more on Saturday. On Saturday, around about the 8th or 10th, Madrid airport was closed along with many, many roads around the area. And it was absolute gridlocked. It was regarded as being the heaviest snowfall in Madrid for at least 80 years. Well, I haven't got the figures to prove that, but that's probably right. The heaviest snowfall in the Madrid area for over 80 years. Quite staggering, that. So they're not used to it really so much. I mean, I know it's up on the plane. It's quite high up, isn't it, the altitude?
I was about to say, it's on a plateau, isn't it? It's quite
high. It is, yeah. The rain in Spain stays mainly on the plain.
Yep.
It happens to be a high plane.
Very high plane.
Very high up. So they're all. Everybody was around. Apparently, they're all lighting bonfires to try and keep warm. I suppose there was power cuts and all the rest of it. 50 centimetres of snow fell in Madrid on the Sunday, Saturday into the Sunday. And again, sadly, people were washed away in flooded rivers lower down where it was melting. So with all that snow to melt, it did create its own problems as well. Now, this carried on. It went on through the 10th, 11th, 12th of Spain in different parts. The result of all this snow melt meant that there was other people suffering as well, with rivers being swollen. And it even affected Barcelona as well. They had some bad weather there. Temperature plunged to minus 25 again in the mountains east of Madrid. So really cold, really wintry, bad spell of weather there in central parts of Iberia. Now, looking across to the far east in northern Japan, there was a big... I mean, they get a lot of snow, a lot of snowstorms in Japan, Hokkaido particularly. They do get some very, very harsh wintry weather. But there's a 130-car pileup on the 19th in Japan, which was a big snowstorm, which was horrendous, but I think that's not that unusual. There shouldn't be 130 cars all piling up together, but it's not that unusual to see that sort of thing. Now, on the 23rd, we had another storm, and this was named Storm Hortense, and that left a trail of destruction after it made landfall in Mallorca. So Mallorca too, the Balearic Islands, they were also hit by significantly bad weather. Damage was caused across the island. At least two people were injured when things were going on. The debris was flying around, and records were broken again in some parts of Mallorca, breaking records set back in February 1996 for very strong winds, gusts up to 80 miles an hour, apparently. In the Tramuntana Mountains, a gust of 80 miles an hour, that's where it was. That's right, yeah, the Tramuntana Mountains, that's where the strongest gusts were recorded. And some places saw some extremely heavy rainfall, and roads were blocked with landslides and downed trees and power cuts and things like that. Now, I'm going to, because, you know, I do owe Bruce an apology. I never actually mentioned the weather in the United States last month, and I dare say you've had the wrath of his complaints.
Well, he has at least had a distraction that they have a new president and a vice president, for which he's obviously very happy. But he does come on every week. He comes on and says, look at what I'm wearing. And it's either T-shirt and shorts, and he's showing me sunshine by the pool, or more often it's cold, wet, miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. They do fluctuate, don't they, with their weather sometimes. I mean, he's in central California, is Bruce, isn't he? The northern parts get an awful lot more snow than he gets, naturally. But they still get the heat waves and the big forest fires and wildfires to the south, I think. So so he's sort of betwixt and between, really. So he gets a bit of everything.
He does, yes.
But on the 27th, 28th, there was a very potent winter storm in northern California again, just a week or so ago. And that brought heavy mountain snow. 36 centimetres of snow was recorded in the Tahoe region in just one night. So about 5,000 people remained under evacuation orders as well because of these bad conditions in the Santa Cruz Mountains. I can't imagine what it's like there. Sometimes it does seem very rough, or it just seems extremely hot as well at the same time. Or very wet, as Bruce will often say. And now across in Australia, finally into Australia, Now, we know that Victoria does also see fluctuating weather. They can change, the temperature in Melbourne can change by 20 degrees C in one day, which is staggering, depending whether the wind's coming up from the Antarctic or it's coming in from the bush. But on the 28th, 29th of January, parts of Victoria had a month's worth of rain in 12 hours, and they had so-called historic rainfall in parts of New South Wales. But back in Melbourne, in Victoria, they recorded 40 millimetres of rain in just 4 hours. It just shows you how it isn't that unusual, but it just seems unusual when they're reporting 40 millimetres in 4 hours. Well, we get that sort of thing here, don't we? Even in Lincolnshire on occasions in the summer, during the storms, it's their summer over there. So they must have had a pretty nasty thunderstorm sitting right over the top, and it wasn't going anywhere in a hurry. It just sat there for a few hours, I think, bringing a deluge of rain and inundations, and people were actually trapped, apparently, with suddenly rising river levels, and it was pretty awful, even in high summer.
It's fascinating listening to you talking, particularly going back to Europe, and about the stalled storm around the Balkans, Albania, Bulgaria and Turkey and places like that. There does seem to be a strange sort of blocking thing going on at the moment, where things are sort of literally arrive here and then just do the circle of doom, coating us and coming back and going away and coming back. Is that unusual, or is that just the way the jet stream is forcing everything at the moment?
Well, we're impinging a little bit on what we've got coming up, but I can go on to that shortly. By its very nature, Europe becomes blocked a little bit more in the winter because of the Siberian high pressure over Russia. Moscow, we see snow in Moscow all the time. And it is the case at the moment. The big block of cold air, which is over Scandinavia, over Greenland, Iceland, across into Siberia, it's a very immovable object, should we call it that. So there are occasions every year, every winter, when everything gets blocked. Everything's trying. There's an awful lot of energy in the jet stream coming off the Atlantic, but sometimes even that hasn't got enough energy to get too far across into the whole of Europe or Northern Europe. So even across the UK, we get these blocked conditions, and it's this cold weather which is on occasions going to bring a big change in our weather. And I think it's probably appropriate now that we just talk about what's happening in the next few days, because
because things are looking even more challenging, particularly for this part of the world, which has fortunately escaped most of the really heavy stuff, hasn't it?
Yeah, we've had a little bit of snow. Different parts of Lincolnshire have had some snow in the past 5 weeks, not amounting to a great deal. But even I think yesterday morning, was it the morning before? Yeah, I think it was yesterday morning.
Yesterday morning we had it.
I think it was a little bit of snow. It fell overnight, really, and then quickly turned slushy and then turned back to rain. But it was a very cold, raw day yesterday. A little bit milder for the next 2 or 3 days. But over the weekend, we will see this sudden incursion of very cold easterly winds coming back, being forced back from the high pressure that's over northeast Europe in the next few days. So this is the big change coming in, Andrew. We are going to see whether we call it a beast from the east. I think we probably will. I think the media will love it. It's beast from the east 2 or 3 or something like that. And we are going to see a big plunge in temperature once we get through the second half of the weekend into maybe most of next week, maybe the whole of next week across many parts of the UK. We are going to see, there's no question about it, an old-fashioned spell of wintry weather. We're going to see what we were brought up to. Ah. We're going to see these very cold east or northeasterly winds blocking the progress of anything from the jet stream off the Atlantic, which used to mean, and probably will still mean, even in these changing times, that we get bands of heavy rain trying to come in from the southwest, but quickly turning to snow as they hit the cold air, which is going to be resident across the UK for the best part of a week. So interesting times lie ahead. There's no question about that. Even though we're looking at temperatures of 8 degrees for the next 3 days, I think by Sunday we'll have gone down to 2. And during next week, we'll be looking to get above freezing. And we'll be seeing the old familiar charts, which were introduced when I was presenting on television. This feels like temperature. Uh-huh. Well, they get all their books out. They get their curves and their graphs, and decide that the Stedman formula proves that a temperature of 0 actually feels like minus 10. So it's going to feel bitterly, bitterly cold. It's all coming out. I'm getting excited even now talking about it.
Sure.
It is. It's going to feel bitterly, bitterly cold from Sunday onwards as we get these very cold Siberian winds sweeping back across the country. And in places there are going to be some heavier falls of snow as well. There's absolutely no question about that. It is going to, we've had an awful lot of sporting casualties over the past week or two anyway, mainly due to waterlogged grounds and flooding. But we're going to see the other side of winter as we go through the next 10 days, because it'll be frozen solid grounds, the ones who haven't got underground heating, obviously. But we're going to have penetrating frosts. The frosts are very penetrating. Once you get the wind strength increasing, even a temperature of -2 into the ground is going to be rock hard. So that's how we're going to see big changes in the winter weather coming shortly, starting probably from Sunday onwards. Who knows how long it will last? There was a time when it could actually happen for a month, as we experienced in 1963. Mm. These days, it tends to get eroded a little bit more quickly from the southwest. But you'd have to say at the moment, it's up in the air. Different computer models are producing different results and different emphasis on this cold weather. But one thing I'm absolutely guaranteeing is that we're going to see some snow in Lincolnshire. And it will be a throwback, really, to what was the sort of conditions that we probably last saw, generally speaking, in the early part of the 80s.
Goodness, John. You're overly excited, I can tell. You see,
I am a little. We still get excited about extreme weather, you see. That's the thing.
And maybe a bit of extreme weather is a good thing to take our minds off other things. But, John, being completely straightforward about it, we're all right for the next couple of days, but it's from the weekend onwards the temperatures will plunge and the likelihood of what they call moderate accumulations, perhaps?
Moderate accumulations. Yeah, that'll be straight from the weather almanac. The meteorological almanac, it was full of books, full of words that you could and could not use. You didn't use the word precipitation because that was something that was made in a chemistry lab.
Absolutely.
In a test tube. Sunny periods meant one thing, sunny intervals meant something different, and sunny breaks is something again. But you could have moderate accumulations, which would be 2 to 4 inches of lying snow. But the problem is, with the winds getting stronger, nothing will be lying, it'll be blowing sideways. So a blizzard is heavy snow going sideways. And you're going to find that you're going to see these piles and piles of snow in the hedgerows, and perhaps on the main road, even a country road, barely a centimetre of snow actually lying. That's the sort of thing that happened. Was that beast from the east, wasn't it, in March? Was it 2018, probably, was it? Or 17, it was, 18, I think.
I think, but yeah, it was about 3 years ago. And I can remember driving across towards Bardney, and it's very flat there. Yeah. And the road either side had banks of snow, but the road itself was fairly clear because it was just literally blowing straight off and into the fields.
That's right. So what you had to do is just keep your foot on the pedal and go straight. Yep. If you went off the beaten track, then you would never get out of the snow.
As Private Fraser would say, we're doomed. We're all doomed.
We're doomed.
John Kettley, well, so be interesting to see what happens when we are joined again at the beginning of next month. But we may still be digging ourselves out. No, probably nothing like as bad as that. But later, when that snow and the frost melts and moves out, because the ground is so saturated, that can bring with it other problems.
Indeed it can. I think, fortunately, the heavier snow is probably going to be on the eastern half of the country, into the Midlands and the Pennines, that sort of area, Scotland, obviously, where it's bad anyway at the moment. Over in the west, where they've had the heaviest rainfall up to now, say over Wales, then probably the snow wouldn't be so significant over that side. So in a way, it's a period of drying out in the west of the country, whereas the east will get the worst of it.
John, we're so excited with you, alongside you, about the disaster that is looming. But thanks once again for being with us here on Siren Radio. And we look forward to hearing from you again, all things being equal, in a month's time here on Siren Radio.
Marvellous.